You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Now, as I shamelessly plugged at the start of the show, Shefu is indeed, well, this interview is what I shamelessly plugged, but Shefu is indeed inducted into this year's Te Whare Taonga Pūoro Aotearoa, the New Zealand Music Hall of Fame. It's amazing. 25 years on from Navigator, which is an epic album that has soundtracked my summers and my youth. And I was lucky enough to talk to Shefu about it. So this is their interview now. Thank you all for listening. What a legend. You've been the soundtrack to a lot of my youth in New Zealand, but I was wondering if you'd indulge me if we could cast an eye back to your youth in Greyland, Ponsonby area. What was the music that was on in your household that kind of informed what you did throughout your career? Who were you listening to?
Me personally, I was right into funk and soul, and I used to listen to BFM on a Sunday night, Murray Kamek, Land of the Good Groove. Yeah. And so that introduction to funk was awesome, because at that time I was playing a lot of blues music in a blues band, and that sort of was a, you know, a gateway into the funk. And Murray Kamek definitely was helped me on that journey. Yeah,
he's such a legend. Love Murray. And say that, and it's so fitting, because I'm thinking about the Spin One lyrics, you know, that girl Aretha, Diva Simone on the microphone. I mean, sure. Roberta Flack always takes me back. It makes so much sense that you said that as well. I love that music video as well, because it, you know, it starts with you flipping through the records with Aradhana. And when I was doing some research for this, I read that you went on a trip to New York just after you left Supergroove. What was that trip like, and how did that influence what you wanted to do when you came back?
Nick, it was amazing. I was spoiled as heck. Well, I'll start from the beginning. So I was asked to, you know, write an album for the record company. At that time, I was with BMG, and I submitted my demos, and there were a few question marks. They weren't too sure if they were in agreement with the direction I was going in, because basically I came to the offices, brought in about 12 CDs, played them what I was gonna sort of aim the record at in terms of the sound and the vibe, and they were like pretty shocked. And so they said, come to the office tomorrow and we'll discuss our next move. So I go into the offices the next day, and they were like, listen, we're not too sure about the reggae influence in your album. We'd like to send you to New York, give you a couple of months out there, let you soak up the atmosphere, maybe meet a few producers. And so when I initially heard them say that they went into the reggae vibe, I immediately, my back went up. I was like, say what, man? But as soon as they said that about the trip, I was like, oh, hold up. And I was like, there were two things that came to mind. One was like, wow, you really have no understanding on where hip hop comes from, or reggae for that fact. Because like, if you knew, then you wouldn't send me to New York. Because like, in terms of reggae music, I mean, there's Jamaica, of course, UK, London sound, you know, black culture out there. And then New York, surely. I mean, there's a place out there, Queens, New York, you know what I mean? So that really sort of was revealing as to where they were coming from. I was like, okay, but I wasn't going to turn down a trip like that, though. So I was like, okay, yeah, teach me a lesson, man. Yep, I need to. Yeah, that's right. You're right. I need to learn. Okay. So I went out there, and it was amazing, bro. I just went to shows. I had a few friends from Aotearoa that lived over there, so I linked up with those cats. His brother, Damon Riker, shop bro, he took us to all these shows. Plus, the record company had linked up a few meetings with a couple of producers. That didn't go too well, but it did teach me something in terms of, as a writer and a producer of music. I felt like, wow, I don't know if it was my ego or whatever, but I don't really need to work with these guys that you guys have sort of made these meetings with. I mean, when they asked me who I'd like to work with, I was like, yo, Primo, you know what I mean? Jay Dilla or whatever, those types of ilk. And that was in a price range which wasn't my price range. So the producers that I was working with were relative unknowns, which was all good. And I was just being honest. When I heard their stuff, I was thinking, man, I'm sure I could make that stuff myself without having to pay such a high price, because I'd have to pay for flights and an ACOM, as well as most of the producers wanted me to buy the outboard gear as well on top. So that means samplers, amps, and all that stuff on top of the fee. So I was thinking, man, I don't know if I can justify that when I think I can make whack beats just as whack as that for free.
I love that so much. And it's insane to hear you talk about that kind of genesis, because like in my mind, and I'm sure to so many other people, you were instrumental in bringing like that hip hop sound and flavor to Aotearoa. What was the landscape like for hip hop and R&B music in Aotearoa before you made your debut record, your debut solo record?
Like it was kind of rough. It was kind of rough for, people who are into producing and making black music in general in the country at that time. We were immediately sort of pigeonholed into, oh, you want to be Americans, or if we did rap, oh, that's that drug dealing and gun-toting stuff, which was really kind of superficial, and obviously there were like the stereotypical sort of takes on rap music at the time. But in terms of the climate here, it was MOR rock on the radios that pretty much ran the country. So it was a difficult time to try and get your original rap music out there. I was not alone. There were people like King Kapisi, of course, Damn Native, and we would all congregate together because of that sort of vibe in the country. And so that was cool. It galvanized us together, and that's nationally too, from Christchurch to Wellie. You know, we all supported each other, knew who we were, and sort of kept tabs on where we were at, and just were genuine fans of hip-hop and local hip-hop. So, yeah, it was cool, and it was a little tough.
It's crazy to hear that they had that perception of it, like, as well as, like, just what you talk about in your lyrics as well. Like, it feels like activism isn't just a part of your musical practice, it's central to it. Like, I think of Chains, and I think of your contribution on Anchor Me, and all these things that you've been a part of. Like, recently I went to go vote in the local elections last year, and I was walking up to the polling booth, and there was this big, like, pop-up thing happening. I thought, oh, they're playing Shefu here, the DJ's on, and it was you, and you were playing at World Homelessness Day. And, like, seeing someone of your profile, like, activism has kind of always been a part of that. I wondered if you could speak a little bit about how you frame music's role and an artist's role in society as being like part of the activism for you.
I guess, you know, it's hard to not come across preachy, you know, being a writer of words and a person who puts it out there. So I just try and just stay authentic to myself and how I was brought up, and just tap into that. Like, I'm out here not for the likes, you know what I mean? Like, you came across that little performance there at World Homeless Day, and I was just happy to be there, you know what I mean? And the love that I felt from everybody and the love that we exchanged and shared on that day was why I was there. And that speaks to my upbringing. My father's also a strong fighter for things that are rights and for justice and truth. So I kind of just follow in his footsteps, and also same as my mother. She rest in peace. She was a strong soldier worker for our people in terms of the work that she did for the protests in the 70s and the 80s and so forth. So really, I'm just tapping into where I came from. When I do these things for our people, it's kind of more so I feel compelled to do so. It's a duty. And I also sing. I happen to be a muser as well. Like, you know,
my brother, I'm so glad you talked about love there, because I think there's this undying optimism that runs throughout all your records. Like, it speaks about issues, but it also imagines a beautiful future, like a Polynesian futurism that, I mean, when I listen to Hold Tight, it makes me feel held, like, and like I can imagine something beautiful and new. Navigator turns 25 this year. You released it 17 days before I was born, which is crazy enough. Oh. And it's held such a special place in my heart. But speaking of that Polynesian futurism, do you remember a moment in your brain where you wanted to tap into that for Navigator or your earlier records where you're like, we can imagine a future? Was it a blend of your like love for comics as well?
Yeah, all of that, brother. Absolutely, all of that. I mean, as it was symbolized in the artwork, a young father with his son on his back using a futuristic palm holder to map out where he's about to travel to next. A very, very sci-fi future that definitely speaks to my love of, comics. Animation that sort of but in terms of like the underlying core symbolism to it, I was enjoyed imagining a future where us as a Pacifica, tangata whenua, are in control of our future, and using all the tools that are available at our disposal and heading towards Hawaiki. And so that was kind of like the general concept for that record and for that thing.
I mean, it stands the test of time. I wanted to ask you a bit of a self-indulgent question, if that's okay. There's a rumor that floats around BFM that Misty Frequencies was a reference to 95 BFM. Is that true, or is that...
It was to the... It's the Murray show. Murray Kamek show. Yep.
That is...
It literally is that. Like, musically, Misty was also... started out from a kernel, an idea, a chrysalis that was... originally brought to this world by Godfrey the Guru, my keyboardist at the time, and we actually performed that at a bar called The Local in Manurewa. And so I freestyled the lyrics when we first jammed it at that place, and you know, that was the reference to the local boy, that type of thing. But when I fully fleshed the idea out, I was like, oh no, this is about a young man, me, on my bed listening in my Walkman to the Land of the Good Groove, Murray Kamek show on a Sunday.
Big ups, Murray Kamek. We love Murray Kamek.
One of his famous lines is, fried chicken, keeps you funky.
He's so cool. I do the Friday drive show, so I come in after Murray sometimes, and like, just sometimes he lets you look through his records, and I'm like, it's just, I mean,
whoa.
You know? Or he'll be like, oh, yeah, this is something I got in America, and it's the craziest thing you can't find anywhere. And I'm like, yeah, of course, Murray.
You're very lucky.
I'm blessed. Yeah. I'm very blessed. It's so cool to hear you talk about localism, because I think one of the things that is particularly special about the music that you've made is it draws on genres from around the world, but it's from here, it's for here. Like, the localism is part of it as well, the things you talk about as well. And it feels like that's influenced so much good Aotearoa hip-hop and R&B. Like, I think about Moko Mokai's line, bumping Shefu Waka. What does it mean to have inspired that generation of people to not only make hip-hop and R&B music, but make it unapologetically from Aotearoa?
Oh, man, just to think I'm a part of that, it's just the best, mate. Like, I truly do think that hearing those sort of comments is very humbling. But, like, for instance, last night I was at a dinner, and it was to do with the award, and... there was a lot of love flowing around, and the nice words, nice things were being said. And I stood up to give my little speech. And while I was talking, I could hear in the background throughout the restaurant a track by Israel Starr, who's a local reggae artist here. And he's a very good friend of mine. Oh, he's changed his name now to Ehida. Apologies. Ehida Starr. And yeah, man. And I just had to stop during my speech and go, yo, like, you know, hearing my good friend's song in this really fancy restaurant, man, this is part of the reason why I do what I do, man, like to get things like this happening. And so, yeah, it was a cool little moment to highlight. And that speaks to your question. Yeah.
You mean the world to us. I just wanted to ask one last question. Well, I've got two more, if that's okay. So I guess this is a bit of a hard one to draw on, but especially with a career like yours that has been going on for so long. But do you have a favorite moment or story from your career that you feel like you hold very dearly and special to you?
Yeah, I have a few, but one that comes to mind right now is would have to be having my firstborn play perform with me in my band, The Crates. You know, that's my son, and he's so awesome. Like, you know, obviously I'm the doting dad. It's just amazing to be able to perform with him on a regular basis. He's super talented himself, but you know, just to look over, and that's my guy, like, you know. And he happens to be the little boy that used to be in the backpack. Yeah. So now he plays in my band, and that to me, Nick, is something that I cherish.
Yeah, I was looking at the cover of Navigator before and then read that it was your son, and I was like, that is insane. What a beautiful, special moment to go full circle like that, to get a little bit personal now. When we spoke at the start of this about us meeting beforehand, we met, I was 18 years old, I was working in a bar, and I'm a massive Shefu fan, and the bar manager knew that, and we're coming to play. So he let me stand on the stage for a little bit, pretending to be security, and you looked over at me, and you acknowledged me, and you gave me a fist bump and a smile, and that meant the world to me. So I just want to say, like, genuinely thank you for everything that you've done for music and for our people. It means the world, and you're so well deserved this induction. Thank you so much.
Oh, man. Nga mihi nunu ki a koe. Nick, thank you. Thank you for those words. Oh, yeah, that means a lot, brother, man. Appreciate you. And thank you to everybody at BFM for your support. I know what it is, man. I know you all. Appreciate you ever so much.
Shefu, everybody. Thank you for all the love over the text machine. Yes, what an honor to interview the legend himself.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.